You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
To the, what is this? This is Tuesday, isn't it? Tuesday. The Tuesday episode of Feedback. All the days just blend in, don't they? You're on Airtown Square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. Our phone number is 0610-374-8800 or toll free, 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And the email address here is feedback at 830weeu.com. All right, let's take a look at today's top three topics. We've got a lot to cover today. Might homeowners here in Pennsylvania finally see the property tax relief that Governor Rendell promised years ago would come from slot machine revenue? Concerns are being raised about the website vote.pa.gov regarding how one's personal information is ultimately being used. We'll get into the details on that. And a case before the Supreme Court involving a Pennsylvania man could affect hundreds of prosecutions stemming from the January 6th storming of the Capitol building, including the one involving Donald Trump. Oh boy, wait till you hear what that is all about. And at 10 o'clock today, I'll be joined by Craig Snyder. He's the political director of Pennsylvania's Forward Party. He'll discuss what the party is all about and the candidates that the party is fielding in the November general election for some statewide offices. So that is what is on our agenda for today. So let's get started first and foremost with that slot machine story, especially since property tax relief has been a hot button topic on this show for quite a while now. I got this from Penn Live. It's been 20 years, believe it or not, since then-Governor Ed Rendell promised an annual $1 billion in property tax relief would be coming in a few years, he said at the time. Remember that? And depending on how you count it, the day may have finally arrived, Penn Live reports. Budget Secretary Yuri Monson yesterday certified that a record $900 million will be available from the state's 34% slot machine tax to lower next year's school property tax bills. Or in Philadelphia's case, for anybody listening in the city of brotherly love, the wage tax. That includes projected slots revenue expected to come in through October 15th. In addition, he certified nearly $176 million is available to help fund the expanded property tax and rent rebate program for seniors and individuals with disabilities. Added together, some might say Pennsylvanians finally are seeing the billion-dollar property tax relief Rendell said slots gambling would deliver. 20 years ago, he made that promise. But that isn't how Governor Josh Shapiro's administration frames it. Here's what the governor said in a news release. Thanks to strong revenues and conservative projections from the Office of the Budget, the Shapiro administration is able to make available a historic amount of state funding for property tax relief. The news release goes on to say that an additional $150 million will be available per year for each of the next 5 years to help cut taxes and lower costs for Pennsylvanians. Back in 2006, when the Taxpayer Relief Act was signed by Rendell, it was anticipated that the 14 planned casinos at that time would begin to produce the $1 billion in property tax reduction annually by 2009 or 2010 at the latest. Well, by 2012, the total available to reduce school tax bills was $782.5 million, still short of that promised $1 billion. Since then, a new law allowed satellite casinos to open, raising the number of slots revenues or slots venues in operation to 17 in the state. And online slots play was introduced. Both helped to generate the record slots tax revenue available for property tax relief. But House Republican Appropriations Committee Chairman Seth Grove of York County says he believes the state could have achieved the $1 billion mark, not including the money for the property tax and rent rebate program, this year and last year as well. Here's what Grove said. For the second straight year, Governor Shapiro has intentionally shortchanged the citizens of this Commonwealth by under-certifying the total amount of monies in property tax relief fund. As with last year, the budget secretary had the opportunity, he said, to certify more than $1 billion in gaming revenues available for property tax relief, yet he refused to do so, Grove went on to say. By the way, Seth Grove is going to be on the program tomorrow at 9:15 to state his position on this. In accordance with Act 1 of 2006, school districts are required to pass 100% of their allocation of property tax relief funding on to taxpayers. Often that's done by increasing the homestead exemption, which lowers property taxes by reducing the taxable assessed value of the home. For example, if a home is assessed at $50,000 and the homestead exclusion is $5,000, then the homeowner only pays taxes on an assessed value of $45,000. School districts often use the funding announced by the Shapiro administration to increase the homestead exclusion, which in effect means homeowners have a smaller tax burden and are required to pay less in property taxes. The amount of the relief varies across school districts, with property owners in poorer urban districts receiving bigger reductions. In 2022, the Department of Education's website indicates the average statewide property tax reduction for each household was around $290, according to this Penn Live article. The department will notify each school district of its property tax reduction allocation by May 1st, and that figure will be available on its website. So there you have it. Maybe we have finally gotten what Governor Rendell promised us 20 years ago with property tax relief coming from revenue generated through the slot machines across the state. And again, Representative Seth Grove, who is a state representative from York County, will be on our show tomorrow morning at 9:15 to state his case regarding property tax relief. Well, another story that has come out. I got this from broadandliberty.com regarding a Democratic-aligned voter registration website vote.pa.gov. And let me read this to you, what Todd Shepard writes in his article that appears in broadandliberty.com. He says, if you were to visit the website vote.pa.gov, you can enter your personal information and the website will register you to vote with the Pennsylvania Department of State. But don't be surprised a few weeks later if the website is also sliding into your text messages, urging you to vote for your local Democratic candidate. Or maybe begin sending you even more political mailers than you already get each fall. Vote.pa sounds very much like the real Pennsylvania Department of State website, vote.pa.gov. The website's logo, a deep blue outline of Pennsylvania with a white vote inside the borders, looks thematically similar to the blue keystone with a white PA used in official state websites. But tucked away at the bottom of the page is the note that the site is a project of Commonwealth Communications. Commonwealth Communications is a 501c4 political nonprofit run by J.J. Abbott. Now, who's J.J. Abbott? He was Governor Wolf's former press secretary, and he's now a political operative. The website's privacy policy page, which studies say less than 9% of website visitors actually read those disclaimers, makes clear, and I quote now, "We may use your personal information to connect in connection with our political efforts and activities." And of note, vote.pa asks for a phone number, while the state website does not. So again, we're talking about the difference between Vote PA, which this article is talking about, versus vote.pa.gov, which is the official State Department run website here in Pennsylvania. The article goes on to say, as far as this privacy policy is concerned, it states, "We reserve the right to share your personal information to third parties as part of any potential business or asset sale," meaning the website is well within its rights to sell data collected from a visitor. Broad and Liberty reached out to Abbott through emails publicized both on federal filings as well as on Commonwealth Communications' website. Additionally, Mr. Shepard writes, "We reached out through a phone number listed on its Facebook page. The requests for comment were not returned or were not successful." Now, Mr. Shepard writes in his piece that at least two Democratic state senators have promoted the website using their campaign-associated X accounts, formerly known as Twitter. Elected officials have greater leeway to promote various political messages through campaign-associated accounts when compared to official state accounts used to interact with the public. Now, here's an interesting part that Mr. Shepard writes in his article. Last week, Senator Judy Schwank told her followers, and I quote, "Please make sure your voter registration is up to date," and then linked to vote.pa in the post. "I really want to earn your vote, but first we have to make sure you're registered to cast it," so wrote Senator Jay Costa, a Democrat from Allegheny County, said in his X posting. And he also linked to the website vote.pa. If the senators were tricked by the website, or alternatively, if they approved of using the website to build a political database, they aren't sane, Mr. Shepard writes in this article. Requests for comment from both were not returned. Additionally, Governor Josh Shapiro attended a voter registration event at Penn State Abington last Sunday, which was organized by two groups that promote vote.pa on their own websites. Shapiro can be seen on social media posts at the event hosted by The Voter Project and Show Up Strong 24. The latter group has an email address on its website that belongs to The Voter Project, so it's possible the two groups are the same. But both websites point people to vote.pa to register, and a request for comment from Shapiro's office was also not returned. So be very careful which website you go to. Vote.pa.gov is a legitimate website that is run by the Pennsylvania Department of State, the department that handles our voting laws and everything connected to our elections in this state. It's vote.pa that you need to be aware of, and the fact that they can use your personal information to garner support for the Democrats. But let's go to the phones instead. Representative Seth Grove, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, and thanks for highlighting that Broad and Liberty story. That is crazy how it provides a scam to collect your personal information, use it for nefarious needs, and sell it to God knows whoever. So thank you for highlighting that.
Sure, and thank you for calling in today. I was expecting your call tomorrow, so forgive my forgive me for being caught off guard there. But share with me, because I also did a story here. I highlighted an article from Penn Live that talked about this slot machines revenue story, and I happened to see that you posted something on LinkedIn last night that caught my eye regarding this. What are your thoughts on this $1 billion claim?
Right. So go back in time before I was a member of the House of Representatives here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Ed Rendell wanted to save the horse racing industry. So they did casino gaming, slot machines. A portion of that revenue was used for property tax relief through the Property Tax Relief Fund. You see it. You have to apply for it. Most people have. But you see it in your school property tax bill when your house looks like it's devalued, so the assessment drops. That's how it's calculated in there. But at the time, Governor Rendell said, "We're going to get $1 billion in school property tax relief." Well, probably what, 20 years later,
mm-hmm.
We have the money in the account, but the Shapiro administration for the past 2 years have refused to certify it. So last year they actually reduced the amount by $3 million. And then this year they upped it to $900 million, about a little over $100 million increase, but failed to hit the billion-dollar mark. Actually, the governor's proposed budget, if you look in the very back, hidden away in the special fund section, it said they were going to certify $1,085,000,000 this year for property tax relief for homeowners. So they cut you, all the residents, about $185 million short. So for the past 2 years, it's probably close to almost $400 million that could have been going to reduce school property taxes that they have failed to certify.
Now, before I go any farther, I should point out again that Mr. Grove is chairman of the Pennsylvania House GOP Appropriations Committee. Share with me, Seth, why would the governor do that? Why would he shortchange taxpayers?
I don't know. We asked the revenue secretary, who is former state senator Pat Brown. He was the Senate Appropriations Chairman for a number of years. He's an accountant, CPA. We asked him if there was money available to do $1 billion during budget hearings this past year in March, and he said, yes, there is. When asked, pressed in budget hearings, Uri Munson is the governor's budget secretary. He actually does the certification. If money is available, he's like, well, we need to be cautious. We need to make sure it's sustainable. And I said, you know, you have money in there. He's like, yeah, yes, we do. We anticipated them doing it because it would be, for the first time ever, $1 billion at Rendell. Like, the governor could have had a big heyday over it. We don't know why specifically they keep failing to certify $1 billion. My only thought is they want to keep it, the money available to use it for other things. So this year's budget, they want to steal some of that money and put it towards EMS and firefighter grants, additional, I think, $20 million. So I'm very worried they want to use it for nefarious things and not for the original purpose of providing tax relief for homeowners.
Mr. Grove, the issue of property tax relief has been a hot button issue on this mm-hmm. show for quite a while. I've had a number of callers call in saying year after year after year, politicians in the state promise us property tax relief and we don't see it. What do you say to people who criticize that?
Yeah, it's a fair criticism because people run on it. Politicians talk about it and stuff. It's just not an easy solution. I know we've thrown out a slew of proposals to do tax shifting. So tax shifting is raise one tax to alleviate another tax. You have a core group that wants elimination only. You have some people that want to do seniors only. So it's tough to get a 102 in the House, 26 in the Senate, and a governor going down the same path to really do something. I would say local school districts have a lot of ability to manage their school property taxes. Here's one example. So right now, school districts do this thing. It's called wraparound debt financing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of paying off debt when it's due and returning that to taxpayers as in a millage rate reduction, they keep it active and basically go do a new project. What that does is artificially inflate school property taxes. So if they do an increase, they get more money. So they maximize their revenue through this process. Red Lion School District, I'm from York County. So Red Lion School District actually paid off a school building. They reduced their millage rates and retired that debt, and it saved on average homeowners $200. So having responsible school board members that do those kind of things, say, we don't need this debt anymore, let's return it to the taxpayers, is a great way. And when you look at school property taxes, about 50% mm-hmm. comes from pensions and debt. So if school districts would alleviate that debt burden when the debt's paid off and retire the debt and return to taxpayers, that'll provide a 25% reduction in school property taxes. And at some point, the pension is going to subside, right? It's going to be the artificially unfunded liability portion is going to get paid off. That needs return to taxpayers too. So you can do a 50% reduction by not raising a single other tax. It's just managing how school districts operate. So I actually introduced a bill to require school districts to retire taxes. I also authored legislation to, when that pension liability is paid off, that they have to reduce their property taxes as well. Because it's one of the reasons they said they needed to raise property taxes as pension. So if there's no issue, it should be returned to taxpayers. And that's a 50% tax cut without having to raise anybody else's taxes. And that's the crux of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you would do a combination of income tax and sales tax, all people do is calculate whether they'll benefit or lose from it. So, you know, if you're going to pay a higher income tax and sales tax, you can calculate your tax liability and what you pay in school property taxes. You know, if you're paying more under the new plan, you're opposed to it. To be honest, if you're probably paying the same, you're opposed to it as well. And then there's going to be individuals who make out benefit from it because they have a higher property tax burden than they would under a new income tax or sales tax regime. So that's it's just tough with tax hikes and stuff like that.
The two bills that you talked about that you've authored, where do they stand at this point?
They are sitting in the House Education Committee. Well, Republicans are not in control of the House. We are in the minority, so it's very difficult to get bills out of the majority control, particularly with that kind of Democrats just aren't interested in school property tax cuts at all. As a matter of fact, are you familiar with the Basic Education Funding Commission?
Mm-hmm.
And the lawsuit? The Commonwealth Court said our school funding process is unconstitutional.
Right.
The report that was approved by the Shapiro administration, Senate Democrats, and House Democrats actually has a provision in there that says school districts should raise school property taxes by $291 million. So that's where actually the Shapiro administration and the legislative Democrats are. They want to see actually higher school property taxes.
Well, now that leads to my next question that I was going to ask regarding mm-hmm. the Commonwealth Court ruling and this $1 billion that the then Governor Rendell promised us 20 years ago that now looks mm-hmm. to be coming to fruition. Is it going to be? Are the two going to negate each other? Is the money that's going to be required to fund schools per the Commonwealth Court ruling, is that going to offset any tax benefits we get from this $1 billion slot machine revenue?
No, that's the irony. So the $1 billion that Shapiro is proposing all stems from this basic education funding commission report.
Mm-hmm.
It has three buckets of money, right?
Okay.
The first bucket is the one that says there's some school districts out there, and it's called an adequacy gap. It's a very flush term, right? Adequacy gap. The first bucket is some school districts were financially responsible, and the Democrats felt like they didn't tax their residents enough. So that's the mandated $291 million of school property tax increases Josh Shapiro and the Democrats want to see in school districts. You have the big pot of money, which is the adequacy gap. So they artificially came up with this number of $13,000. So you should spend $13,000 per student, and the money is going to school districts who aren't up to par at that $13,000 per student. And then you have the third bucket of money for school who they feel school districts are had to raise property taxes more than what they think they should have. Now that money goes to them, quote, for property tax relief, but it doesn't mandate school districts actually reduce school property taxes. So that's an additional, I think, roughly $400 million that they want to give school districts to make up for their school property taxes increases. But in there, they say they could eliminate or reduce their school property taxes, but they don't have to. So basically, it's just money for school districts to spend and keep their school property taxes high. So if you care about school property taxes, this Basic Education Funding Commission plan that Senate Democrats, House Democrats, and Governor Shapiro all signed off on does nothing to help you. And it does reverse. It actually mandates school property tax increases.
I'm talking with...
But,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, But the court case, the judge specifically had issues with how we fund schools, particularly with the school property tax provision in it. So it needs addressed, but not how the Democrats want to. That will result in blanket higher school property taxes. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I'm talking with York County Representative Seth Grove, who is chairman of the Pennsylvania House GOP Appropriations Committee. And you mentioned you came in just after I was finished with this vote.pa story. Do you have anything to say about that? Any comments?
Yeah. The one piece that's missing is there's this process that the Department of State uses to allow these third parties to submit the election data directly to the Department of State. It's called Web API. And this, basically, the Shapiro administration, or the Wolf administration, one of them approved them to do this. And it's a scam. You know, it's set up to be a scam, right? It looks like the Department of State. It looks like a government website. You know, vote.pa is just .us is, you know, Department of State. It's designed to look like an official government website, like you are officially registering to vote. So they are, without a doubt, scamming individuals. The fact that you have to provide a last four digit of your Social Security number or driver's license, that's personal information that they can collect. And then the fact that they can sell it to third parties. Who are these third parties, right? Mm-hmm. To me, it is a scam, and it needs shut down. We don't need third-party voter registration websites. We have the Department of State. It's the only one that should be used. And if these organizations, any organization, whether it's a Republican-leaning, Democrat-leaning, you know, Green Party, Libertarian, whoever, you should only use the official website, Department of State, or official voter registration paper forms as a tool. That way, people's personal information is collected. They shouldn't be allowed to collect it. They shouldn't be allowed to have it. There's no reason any private entity should have that type of personal information.
Is anybody in your party filing a complaint, I guess, with the Pennsylvania Department of State about this or no?
I have actually contacted an attorney I've worked with. I actually sued Department of State 2 years ago because they wanted to get rid of a process to catch individuals who try to double vote in the city of Philadelphia. We actually won that lawsuit. It was one of the only lawsuits that Republicans have won in the city. So I've contacted that attorney to see if there's something we can do to stop it from happening. We can also look at legislation to try to ban it and then just get public awareness and basically try to shame the Shapiro administration to do the right thing and have Department of State file. I mean, they have an entire website and a task force designed for misinformation like this. It should be shut down. It is a scam, and it's not right they're doing this to voters and potential voters just to collect their information to sell it to God knows who third-party entity.
York County State Representative Seth Grove is my guest this morning. Seth, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a last-minute invite for you to come on the show, and I'm so glad that you did, and I hope you'll come on the show again some other time, too.
Will do. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Bill. Take care.
You're welcome, Seth. Bye-bye now. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
News you can use.
I feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
Well, it was nice that Seth Grove was able to call in today rather than tomorrow so that we could get his take on the story as we presented it to you on the show today. But we're way behind in our schedule as a result of that, so I apologize to you and to the next person I've got on the line here. We're going to put feedback aside for just a bit and talk with Ron Poplosky of Poplosky's Auto Service and Collision Repair at 4751 Penn Avenue in Sinking Spring. Ron, I apologize to you, buddy.
No, I'm fine. I just called in, and I'm good. I'll try to be brief so that you can continue the wonderful show that you do.
No, don't be brief. Don't be brief. You do your thing.
Hey, if you drive by the shop, just remember, and I've been asked already, I did not sell my shop, and I did not start a new management team out of respect for my dad, who loves the color orange. I changed the logo for my business, and I've been wanting to do that for years. I mean, I love my dad to death, and I miss him like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
And he loved orange and black. So I changed the logo. I simplified it, just like WEEU did with their logo. You can read it really well now. It's the orange and white. I like that. So mine is black and orange. So no, I didn't sell the business. No, I didn't change hands with anybody. I just wanted to change things up a little so when you drove by, you could read it better. And, and out of respect for my dad, I wanted a bright orange sign. So every time I drive into my parking lot, I think more and more of my dad, who I, like I said, I miss him so much. But I have a feeling he's watching me and patting me on the back as we speak to continue the business just as much as well, hopefully, as he did, because everybody loved him. So I'll move on from that. It is definitely getting into, hey, we're almost getting into the summer season. I'm absolutely thrilled. Finally, we're done with all this ice and snow and stuff dripping on my head when I put a car on the lift from the snow and all the rusty, nasty stuff that falls off the trucks and cars when they come in. So we're headed into the next season, which is starting to get warmer. If you haven't turned your air conditioner on, I highly suggest you turn it on and just try it and make sure everything's working properly and make sure your recycle button is pressed on. You'd be surprised how many customers have come into my shop and said their air conditioning hasn't been working well in the beginning of the season, and that's because they're not recycling it inside the car. Put the recycle button on. Put it on full blast. If you smell anything funny coming out of the vents, then you know it's time for a fresh air filter inside the dash. Have that changed. That is a great idea for the beginning of the warm season. And make sure that there's nothing clogging up the front of the condenser slash radiator behind the grill of the car. If you want your air conditioner to work properly, you got to make sure everything is clean and working properly. So keep in mind, all the stuff that they put on the roads within the last couple months for winter has accumulated somewhere on the front of your car and gets stuck inside the radiator, gets stuck inside the condenser, which controls the air conditioning. And if that's clogging anything up in the front, it is definitely going to hurt the way that the air conditioning works in the vehicle. It's also going to hurt the way the car operates and could actually cause a car to overheat. So keep out for it. Just because it looks like there's nothing stuck in the front doesn't mean that there's nothing in the little veins in the radiator and condenser. Just carefully rinse it out with some water, wash out the little bit of muck and debris that's in there, and don't blast it with a full blast pressure washer because that's not good for it. But what I like to do on my vehicles is I'll put a little super clean on the front, on the condenser and the radiator, and just gently rinse it down. You would not believe how much of a difference that can make for just the air conditioning alone comes summertime. So there's my tips for that. The next thing I wanted to mention was I got a beautiful 2006 Ford F-150 four-wheel drive V8 four-door. I know people are always looking for a nice, clean, older truck because the newer ones are so expensive that most of us can't afford them. So if you're in the market for a nice, short bed, four-door, four-wheel drive Ford pickup truck, these F-150s don't stick around long when I get them. I rarely get nice, clean trucks because it's hard enough for me to find them. So I picked that one up the other week. We did a little bit of touch-up work on it, made it really nice. The interior is absolutely gorgeous. And that one is around $11,800, and I think that is a very good price for a nice, older truck that basically looks like it's a new truck. So if you're in the market for a used vehicle or if you're in the market for an SUV or a pickup truck, I'm always buying them and I'm always selling them, and my inventory changes daily. It all depends what's out there, but I don't sell nothing unless it goes through my shop first and gets the stamp of approval from my guys. So anything I sell, I back up with my name. Anything I sell, I definitely go over with a fine-tooth comb because I don't want it coming back and having somebody say, you sold me a lemon. So I do the best I can to check them out really well before we put them on the lot. They get new stickers, inspections, emissions, and any maintenance work that gets done before we even put them on the other side.
And Mr. Braun, share with the folks your hours of operation, where you're located, and how they can get in touch with you.
Well, we are out here on Route 422 in beautiful Sinking Springs, PA. Don't forget, as I always say, the people that advertise with you that just, I mean, I couldn't ask for better customers that come from WEEU. South Mountain Physical Therapy, King's Auto, anybody else that advertises on there, we all count on you to come see our business and, you know, keep us going. We're just a little small family business trying to make it in this big world of ours. Call me at 610-678-6916.
By the way, pal, you mentioned the coming of summer.
Yes.
It's officially 65 days from today.
Wow.
It'll be here before you know it.
I'm not looking forward to the hot days.
No.
I like the spring days.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I'm good with it just in the middle.
Ron Poplawski of Poplawski's Auto Service and Collision Repair, 4751 Penn Avenue in Sinking Spring. Ron, thank you, buddy. Appreciated the call today.
Thank you, sir, and everybody out there. Have a wonderful day. Enjoy this beautiful weather.
Yeah, you do the same, okay?
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. We'll be back with more of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on Air Town Square here on the voice of Berks and Beyond. 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with, I almost called you Seth Grove. Sean Tansky is my producer today. Our phone number is 610-374-8800, toll free, 888-401-0459. Have a few minutes left before we break for the news, and I thought I would share this story with you about hybrids versus EVs. This is an article I got from the Wall Street Journal this morning. They're reporting that electric vehicle sales further decelerated in the first quarter of this year as purchases of gas-electric hybrids remain strong, accentuating a trend that started last year. Industry figures released earlier this month showed that hybrid sales rose 43% in the January to March period, while EV sales flattened, up only 2.7% during that quarter. Contributing to the sluggish EV sales were weak numbers from Tesla, which accounts for about half of the U.S. electric market, according to data from research firm Motor Intelligence. And that may explain why Tesla is laying off about 10% of their workforce as a result. Following years of strong sales gains, EVs have cooled in recent months. Consumers are leery of charging availability and hassles, and we've talked about that on the show here. And prices remain too high for many borrowers or for many buyers, according to dealers and survey data. Many car companies de-emphasized hybrids in recent years as they touted new EV models to satiate enthusiasm from consumers and Wall Street. Well, now, more car buyers are choosing hybrids as a fuel-efficient option that doesn't come with the complications of switching to a fully electric car. And why our president hasn't done more to hype hybrids, I have no idea. The trend is some automakers outlining big plans to add more hybrid models. Ford Motor, for example, said it expects to offer a hybrid version of every vehicle in the U.S. lineup by 2030. Smart move on the part of Ford. And I think Toyota has been very smart in avoiding the EV movement altogether and going the hybrid route. All right, well, we just have a few seconds left. Want to share this with you. Got a confirmation last night that Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. will be here on Feedback next Tuesday during the 10 o'clock hour. So stick around for that. That's U.S. Senator Bob Casey will be my guest on Election Day here on Feedback. All right, with that said, we're going to break for news with Radio PA and ABC, and our own Bob McCool will have a check on sports. And then when we come back with hour number two of today's show, I'll be joined by Craig Snyder, who is political director of a brand new third party called Forward Party. He'll talk about what the party is all about, and we'll also discuss some candidates that the party has put up for statewide offices that'll appear on the ballot in November. So that's hour number two of feedback here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, so stay with us.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, The Voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off hour number two of feedback. You're on air Town Square here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800, toll-free 888-401-0459, and our dedicated text line if you prefer to text us your opinion of the topics of the day is 484-650-3373, and our email address is feedback at 830weeu.com. Well, right now with me on the phone is Craig Snyder, political director of Pennsylvania's Forward Party, and we welcome him to feedback. Good morning, Mr. Snyder. How are you today?
I'm well, Bill. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling in. And share with us, it's a brand new party. Share with us the background of the Forward Party. What got it started?
Sure. So Forward was started about a little more than 2 years ago by one-time Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang. He felt that his experiences in the Democratic Party were something that could be improved upon in our politics, and he wanted to start something new. Our slogan is "Not left, not right, forward." Which kind of sums up the idea that that people associated with Forward believe that the two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, have kind of gone too far in their extreme directions, one to the left and one to the right, leaving behind what we call the exhausted majority in the middle, and we want to give those folks a voice. So Andrew Yang started the party and then was joined about a little more than a year ago by a bunch of former Republicans, led by Christy Todd Whitman, former governor of New Jersey, Karen Healy, former lieutenant governor of Massachusetts on the Republican side, and people like me who had been in the Republican Party for a very long time but felt that it had gone in a direction that we just didn't approve of. And we're trying to start something new and give people a new set of choices.
Craig, is it just Pennsylvania where the party has candidates on the ballot in the fall, or are there other states that you're working in, that the party's working in as well?
So the ultimate goal is to be a national third party, and we are working. We have volunteers who are working in nearly every state. But we're concentrating, the national organization is concentrating on six or seven targeted states. Pennsylvania is definitely one of those. And in those targeted states, we have much more active organization and we're moving forward with candidacies. I would say that Pennsylvania is in many ways kind of the sort of sharp end of the sword for Forward. We are doing a lot of activity here. We're getting a lot of traction here. We recently announced two statewide candidates, one for attorney general, one for treasurer. We'll be announcing candidates for the state legislature right after the primary. And this is a place where we're, sort of really making a stand.
And I'm going to ask you about the candidates for the statewide offices in a little bit. But share with us, how does the Forward Party differ from the what we kept hearing about No Labels? Other than the fact that No Labels isn't able to come up with a presidential candidate to run in their party, how do you folks differ from that No Labels movement?
Well, I would say the philosophy behind the two organizations is similar in that we speak for people who really feel that the two major parties no longer speak for them. But beyond that, it's very, very different because No Labels was focused for the last couple of years entirely on this proposition that they were going to field a candidate for president and vice president of the United States. This year they were going to, you know, be the first real significant challenge to Democrats and Republicans at the presidential level. They devoted lots and lots of resources to that, and obviously they came up short. We said from the very beginning that we were not going to try to be involved in the presidential race this cycle, that we believe in building from the bottom up. We feel that third-party candidates or minor party candidates in this year's presidential race are really, you know, really spoiler factors. That they're not. It's not credible that a third-party candidate could actually win, actually get to 270 electoral votes. And so the only role that a third-party candidate for president can play this year is to take some votes away from Joe Biden, some votes away from Donald Trump, and help one or the other of them win, which is not a role that we wanted to play. So we're in a very different direction. We're building from the bottom up. We're talking about local offices and state offices. We're talking about getting ballot access for our candidates going forward in future years. We're in this for the long haul. It could take a generation to build really a credible, viable, durable national party. But you got to start. You know, every journey starts with the first steps, and that's what we're taking at the local level right here, right now.
I'm talking with Craig Snyder, who's political director of the Pennsylvania Forward Party. Craig, am I to take what you just said to mean that there will not be a presidential candidate this year forwarded or fielded by the Forward Party?
That's correct. That's correct. There will not be any Forward candidate for president or vice president.
I've read in earlier articles that you were quoted as saying there were a couple of obstacles that the party was facing in order to get some candidates on the ballot. Do those obstacles still exist? And if so, what are they?
Well, you know, look, the people who write the rules for getting on the ballot and for becoming a political party or a political organization in each state are the current elected officials in that state, right? And those elected officials are Republicans and Democrats. Now, Republicans and Democrats disagree like cats and dogs about almost everything these days. They're hyper-partisan against each other. But the one thing they kind of agree on is they don't want more competition. So they write laws that make it hard for independent folks to participate in the political process. Pennsylvania is one of only a handful of states left in the country that have this totally closed primary system, where if you're not registered in one of the two parties, you can't vote in the primaries, which means you can't help select the candidates that ultimately end up on the ballot in November. We get situations where candidates are nominated by, you know, 8 or 9% of the eligible voters in certain primaries, which is certainly not representative democracy. And 1.3 million Pennsylvanians who are registered unaffiliated with either the Democratic or Republican Party, registered independent, in other words, are left out of the process altogether, including many, many veterans and others who have served our country and who don't get to participate in primaries. So we think that those rules are simply wrong. There ought to be open primaries, which would encourage more people to do what their conscience tells them, which is register independent. Right now in Pennsylvania, a lot of folks register either as a Republican or a Democrat, not because they wouldn't prefer to register independent or with a smaller party, but because they know that if they do that, then they can't vote in the primaries and they can't help select candidates that are going to end up winning these offices. So that's one thing, is the closed primary system. The other thing is you have to go out and get a significant number of signatures in order to get on the ballot, a greater number of signatures to get on the ballot if you are not in one of the major parties. So there are hurdles that are put in the way of a competition by the two major parties that just don't want more competition. Having said all that, Forward is well positioned. We've got lots of volunteers. We have a good donor base. And we're going to get our candidates on the ballot this year, and they're going to achieve the votes that they need for us to have official party status going forward starting next year.
I invite any listeners who might have a question for Craig to call in if you'd like, 610-374-8800 or toll free, 888-401-0459 are the numbers. Craig, have you or anybody within the party been talking with voters? And if so, what is the sense that you're getting from them regarding the two-party systems, the two major party system?
I think there's an incredible amount of frustration right now. I believe that there is, as I said earlier, what we like to call the unexhausted majority. People who do not consider themselves to be ultra progressives on the one hand or MAGA on the other hand, they consider themselves to be more centrist, more problem solving, practical kind of people. They don't hate their neighbors because if their neighbor happens to be in a different political party, I think that's the majority. But they don't feel represented by either of the two political parties. They feel like the two political parties don't want to solve problems, but just want to try to kill each other. And so they're unwilling to compromise. But compromise is absolutely built into our system. It's, you know, Pennsylvania, of course, is where the American Constitution came from, where American democracy was born. And it's all about compromise. Nobody gets 100% of what they want. And you give and trade. But the two current parties really seem unwilling to do that. They would prefer to keep an issue alive, keep a problem going, than to compromise and come up with a common sense solution. So I think there's a tremendous amount of frustration with this hyper-partisanship.
How about the two presidential candidates, Joe Biden and Donald Trump? Are you hearing anything from voters regarding those two gentlemen?
Well, yes, I think it's. I think your listeners will be no surprise. It's reflected in all the public polling. There are not a lot of people who are enthusiastic about either of these candidates. Let me rephrase that. There are probably 20% of the electorate on each side that is enthusiastic about one or the other candidate. You probably got about 40% of people who are, you know, who have some real energy behind one of the two candidates. But the other 60% wishes they had other choices and wishes they had better choices. Now, again, Forward's not working on that this year. We believe this is the choice that America has, is these two candidates, and people have to make their decision and pick what they think is the better of the two. But we are hoping that in future presidential cycles, you don't have 60% of the people feeling like, there ought to be better choices.
Well, here's the reason why I asked about the two presidential candidates. Clearly, if people are not happy with either of the choices, they could end up staying home and not voting at all, where it might impact your candidates that you're putting up for elected office this year. Are you hearing anything from voters who are so frustrated that they're telling you they don't intend to vote either in the primary or the general?
Well, very few people are going to vote in the primary. I mean, that's just a fact. Pennsylvania's primary comes after the nominations have been decided for president in both of the major parties. So there's no impact there. We do, of course, have important races in the primary for the row offices this year. Lots of good citizens will go out and vote and do their duty. But as a percentage of the eligible voters, it'll probably be a fairly small turnout in the primary. I do think that will change in November, Bill. I mean, despite people's frustrations with this choice, they understand that it's really important. It really is consequential. Joe Biden and Donald Trump represent very different, directions in policy, in vision, in tone, just very different. And I think people will ultimately say, I've got to pick whichever one of these I think is the better, even if I don't love the choice.
Talking with Craig Snyder this morning, he's political director of Pennsylvania's Forward Party, a party that's been in existence for about 2 years now. And they're taking a more moderate stance on politics. We've got a couple of people who are listening to the show this morning who have questions for you, Craig. Let's start with Sue in Schwanksville, Montgomery County. Sue, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, and I'm glad you had this guest on. I think it's very interesting. I am with him on this open primary. I think that if we had open primaries, you know, you'd have 60% of the electorate registered as independents. But what my question has to do with, as far as the constitution of the Forward Party folks, In other words, what percentage do you think are for the forward party because they, A, have Trump derangement syndrome, or they don't like how far right the GOP is, or how many are just disgusted with the far left leaning of the current Democrat Party? In other words, they're too left. Do you think that most of the people in your forward party are more moderate than both of the parties?
The short answer to that, Sue, is yes. I think that forward is attracting people who are in the center. They may be a little center left. They may be a little center right. We absolutely have lots of people who are sort of former Democrats, and we have lots of people who are former Republicans. So we've got a range of opinions, and we welcome that. We really welcome that. One of the things that's different about this party is that we want to be a big tent, and people can disagree as long as they are not disagreeable, which is the opposite of what we've seen in both of the other parties, where if you don't follow the litmus test, you get purged, you get expelled. So I think you've got people who are more moderate in their political views, also more moderate in their, in their temperament, in the way they deal with one another.
Sue, did that answer your question?
Yeah, kind of, but I kind of want to get a feel for, let's just say that 100% of your forward party, like, do you think, and I know I'm asking you probably an impossible question, but are most of them coming from disaffected Democrats, or are most of them coming from disaffected Republicans?
Good question. And I will tell you the honest truth is it's just about 50-50. It really is. We have a lot of both. People who feel, and those people would all say the same thing, which is, I don't feel like I left my party. I feel like my party left me. And I just didn't feel comfortable there anymore. And it's for different reasons on different issues. But the common thread is the desire for a fresh start with some new ideas.
Sue, thank you for your call today. Appreciated the call, the questions. Okay. They were good questions, by the way.
And thanks for having him on.
All right. You're welcome, Sue. Bye-bye now. We're going to take a commercial break here. And Patrick in Moton, you're on hold. I'll take your call for Craig in just a bit. Craig, hang in there. We'll be back after these words here on Feedback on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on air, Town Square. Our phone number is here if you have a question for my guest, who is Craig Snyder, political director of the Pennsylvania Forward Party. The numbers are 610-374-8800, toll-free 888-401-0459, and our dedicated text line, if you want to text your question in, is 484-650-3373. And Craig, we've got Patrick in Moton, who's on the line now. He's got a question for you. Patrick, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, Bill and Craig. First, I'd like to say the open primary thing, I'm not really a fan of that because I think the people of a particular party should be able to select their own candidates. But that leads me to my question, and I haven't found a good answer for it. Why aren't third parties in Pennsylvania allowed to be on a primary ballot where you'd put up multiple candidates for that party?
The simple answer is because the Pennsylvania legislature has made it illegal in statutes that go back decades. You have to be a quote major party in order to have primaries, major party is defined as you have at least 15% of the total electorate registered in your party, which in Pennsylvania today would be about 1.5 million people. So it's a process of exclusion. I mean, it's sort of a monopoly practice, in this case, a duopoly practice, where you've got kind of collusion between the Republicans and the Democrats, As I was saying earlier, they don't agree on much, but they do agree on not having more competition. I think they're afraid of more competition. So they make it hard. They put these rules in place.
Yeah, and excellent answer. I didn't know that. And I think I'd fight with you. I'd love to see someone take on that fight to try to at least get that bar lowered to give people more choices. But as far as an open primary, I don't like that idea because I think people of a certain party should be able to pick their own. But I agree with you. You should be on a primary ballot at least, at the very least, to give people choices. That's all.
Yeah, reform efforts of that kind, Patrick, they have some support in the legislature, but they haven't been able to get through the leadership in the two parties that are really kind of determined to keep things buttoned down because that benefits the status quo.
Well, of course, you're not going to get a politician to vote against their own interests. You know? That's a given, I guess. But I think if enough people were, pressed on it, I think the populace has to do it, not just third parties. I think people need to wake up and, voice their opinion to their legislators, or nothing's going to change in that respect. So. All right, good luck to you.
Patrick, thank you for your call today. Appreciate it.
Bye.
And Craig, I got Jeremy from Wummelsdorf who texted in a question here, and here's his question. How is the Forward Party any different from the Libertarian Party or the Green Party or any other independent third party?
Well, I mean, each of those, I'm not going to speak for those other parties, of course, but what I'll say is that I think that those existing third parties in Pennsylvania are pressing what I would consider to be their own platform, their own ideological agenda. Forward is doing something different. Forward is trying to build a coalition of people who disagree on different things, but who want to come together to change the political system. And our focus is on values. Values of civil discourse. Let's have people talk to each other, debate fairly, compromise, and trying to find practical, wherever possible, evidence-based approaches to problems. That's very different than, for example, the Libertarian or the Green parties that have what I would call, sort of rigid ideological positions. If you're going to be a member of one of those parties, if you're going to be a candidate for one of those parties, you have a set of platform positions that you have to take. That's very different for Forward. We are welcoming, creative, and polite disagreement. And by the way, it used to be that way in the major parties. I'm an older guy, and I used to work for Senator Arlen Specter when he represented Pennsylvania. I was his chief of staff in Washington, and at that time. He was a moderate in the Senate, and he was joined by almost 40% of the whole Senate, 40 out of 100, who considered themselves to be moderates. And those moderates included some Democrats who were pro-life, some Republicans who were pro-choice, just to pick that one issue. And today, there's no such thing. If you're a Democrat, you must be pro-choice. If you're a Republican, you must be pro-life. And you can't compromise between the two. And that's, again, just on that's just an example of many, many issues you could cite. Forward wants to go back to what were better times when we had a big tent where you could have people who do not share the same opinion on every policy issue, but they can come together and work together.
Jeremy in Wummelsdorf, I want to thank you for your text question. Very good question indeed. Craig, with what you're saying, that you're welcoming, having a big tent and welcoming people of differing views, if you ever do, if you meaning the party, ever does field a presidential candidate, it sounds to me like it would be a difficult chore of coming up with a platform that everyone can agree on for the party.
I would put it a little differently, Bill. First of all, again, we're not going to be in the presidential politics business anytime soon, but hopefully we will get to that point down the road as we build this thing to be durable and viable for the long term. But when that day comes, what I would say is that the candidate that emerges from the process of nomination will have expressed opinions, his or her opinions, and those opinions will have garnered a majority support within the party. That will therefore be the platform of the party, because the party will have voted for that person, and that person will have certain positions. It'll be the platform for that part, for that office in that year. But that doesn't mean, that's very different from saying you can't be a member of our party if you disagree with any of this.
Now, one of the, clearly, because you don't have a platform, there are things that you're supporting based on the party's website, one of which is ranked choice voting. Share with us what that's all about and why the party is behind that.
So really, there are two issues that in what we would call political reform or democracy reform that we think are really important to help kind of break the gridlock in our politics right now. One of them I've already mentioned is open primaries, and the other is ranked choice voting, where the voter goes into the poll and says, "Here's who I want to vote for. Here's my first choice for this office, let's say U.S. Congress. But here's my second choice. Here's my third choice." And then what happens is that if no one gets above 50% of first choice votes, then you begin to add in and look at who got second choice votes, and so on. And there is a mathematical formula. It's not that complicated, really. But what it does is it ensures that the ultimate winner of that calculation has majority support of the electorate. That person may not have been everybody's first choice, but they have more support at a higher level than any other candidate in the race. And what that ends up doing is pushing the candidates to be more moderate, pushing them away from extremes. If you are running in today's world, you can win races with very small percentages of voters if those voters are the most passionate. Well, who tends to be the most passionate? Those who are very, very ideologically committed on something. And again, that often does not reflect the majority opinion on whatever that issue is. But if you had ranked choice voting, you would have a situation where you don't want to just appeal to the hyper-partisans. You want to appeal to people in the middle. And that would temper some of this extremism that we have going on, we think, in both parties.
How do you address critics of ranked choice voting who say that it adds too much complication to the voting process?
You know, I think it's kind of silly. I think it underestimates the voters. We as ordinary people in the year 2024 do some pretty complicated things all the time on our phones every day. It's only when it comes to this very, very important thing of picking our leaders in our elections that we're still using, 20th and in some ways even 19th century technologies and approaches. I think people can handle it. They can figure it out. They can say, all right, who is my first choice? Who is my second choice? And they can look at the results and see whether they like those results. One place that has ranked choice voting right now is the state of Alaska. And if you look at their last election, people thought that the former Governor Palin was probably going to become the congressperson from Alaska. And by the way, the population of Alaska is small, so they only have one person in Congress. People thought, well, it's going to be Sarah Palin because she's got name ID. Everybody knows who she is. She's a famous person in the state. But there are a lot of people who didn't like Sarah Palin, didn't agree with Sarah Palin. Because of ranked choice voting, Sarah Palin didn't win. She would have won if it was just a winner-take-all situation where whoever gets the most votes, not a majority of the votes, but whoever gets a plurality wins the office, Sarah Palin would have won. But because they have ranked choice voting, they elected another individual as their congressperson, the first Native Alaskan ever elected, who by all accounts is doing a good job and has now majority support in the state. So it is it's a way to counter extremism.
Well, let me ask you this, Craig. Is the party behind this ranked choice voting because it tends to give third party candidates a better choice, a better chance of winning?
No, it's because it tends to give more more moderate and sensible candidates a chance of winning. It really is it's a position against the growing power of the left and right flanks in the Democratic and Republican parties.
All right, we're going to take a commercial break here, and when we come back, I want to talk about the candidates that the Forward Party is putting up for Attorney General and for treasurer here in the state. And my guest this morning is Craig Snyder. He's the political director of Pennsylvania's Forward Party. And we'll be back with more with Craig in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, where our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll free 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And I'm continuing to talk with my guest, Craig Snyder, who is the political director for the Pennsylvania Forward Party. And Craig, your party is fielding two candidates for statewide offices. There's Eric Settle, a former Republican from Montgomery County, just across the way here from us, who's running for Attorney General, and Chris Foster, a former Democrat from Allegheny County, who's running for Treasurer. What can you tell us about each of these gentlemen's platforms? What issues do they view as the most important for them to run on in the fall?
So Eric and Chris, I think, are just a fantastic team. And when you look at that ticket together, you really get a good impression of what Forward is all about. You have one from the eastern part of the state, one from the western part of the state. You have one younger man, Chris is in his 30s, and one more seasoned guy, Eric's in his 60s. You have one former Republican and one former Democrat, again, making the point that we are a big tent and don't have ideological litmus tests. So I think just, you know, sort of the embodiment of Forward's values in this ticket is pretty strong. In terms of the message that both of these guys are going to be offering voters in the state is that these offices, the offices of Attorney General and Treasurer, should be nonpartisan. They should not be held by somebody who is a member of one of these two, you know, unfortunately, warring tribes, which is what the Democrats and Republicans have become in both Harrisburg and Washington. How does it make sense to have people in these two jobs? And really, if you think about it, both of these jobs are sort of referee jobs. And have the referees be on one of the two teams that's playing the game. It just we wouldn't do that in sports, and we shouldn't do it in our political and policy life either. A Democratic Attorney General, to give you an example, has a really hard time dealing with the rising concern about crime and public safety in our state, because the left flank of the Democratic Party is opposed to most criminal prosecution, wants to have abolish prisons and defund police and do all sorts of things on the left. A Republican Attorney General has a hard time enforcing the election laws of the state of Pennsylvania, because the MAGA wing of the Republican Party says that those laws amount to cheating and stealing, and that Donald Trump really won the state in 2020. So you can't get genuine independence in these jobs, genuine fidelity to the purposes of these jobs, from somebody who is on one of these two teams that are playing on the field. You need somebody who has real, true independence and whose only loyalty is to the law and the people of the state. And that's what these two candidates represent, and that's the message they're going to deliver.
Now, I know that you said up front at the beginning of the show here today that the Forward Party is going to be putting up other candidates as well. Is there anything that you can share with us? I know the official announcement is coming. When did you say?
We'll be rolling things out after the primary.
After the primary. Is there anything you can share with us at this point as to what offices we're looking at here that we'll get more information from you in the future?
Well, I'm not going to scoop ourselves. I will tell you there is one other candidate that we have already endorsed. The first candidate that we've endorsed for at the state legislature level, that's a gentleman named Cameron Schroy. Cameron is the presumptive Democratic nominee in Pennsylvania's 33rd state Senate district, which is Adams and Franklin counties. And that is the state Senate district held by Doug Mastriano. Mastriano is running for re-election. So Cameron will be the Democrat running against him. Cameron has affiliated with the Forward Party. So he's running as what we call a Forward Democrat. We have endorsed him. We did an event in Gettysburg just a week ago. Again, why are we doing that? We're doing that because when we have a choice between a moderate, whether that moderate is in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, against an extremist, which I believe Doug Mastriano, you know, may be sort of a leading example of extremism, then we're going to go with the moderate. And that's what we've done there in the Gettysburg area.
Now, that's very interesting because Adams and Franklin counties are very strong Republican territories. How has it gone over so far for Mr. Troy? Has there been enthusiasm expressed by the voters in that area?
We've just launched the effort. I'm going to be completely candid. We're under no illusions. Nobody expects somebody who is not the Republican candidate to win that seat. But voters deserve choice. They deserve an option. We shouldn't have unopposed incumbents running for re-election. That's not democratic. We ought to have the ability to give people a choice. And when you have somebody like Cameron is young. He's 28 years old. He is a civics teacher, a high school civics teacher by profession. I can't think of anybody better to be in the legislature than somebody who actually understands civics. And he is willing to take on this challenge and to say to the voters, don't vote for me because I'm a Democrat. Don't vote against me because I'm a Democrat. Vote for me because I'm the alternative to extremism in the form of Doug Mastriano. And we simply want to support that regardless of what the final outcome may be.
Craig, I have just a few seconds left. For anybody listening who would like to take part and be active in the Forward Party, how can they go about doing that?
Forward.com. We are collecting names and information of people who might want to volunteer. There's all sorts of ways in which you can help. You can help get petitions signed for our candidates. You can help with lawn signs. There's just a million things you can do. And it's great. It's great companionship. It's people who are like-minded, who are having fun while they're helping, I really think, help improve American democracy. So look us up on the web and join us. We'd love to have you.
Craig Snyder, political director of the Pennsylvania Forward Party. Craig, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Pleasure to be here.
I hope to hear from you. I hope to get you back on the show once you folks have announced the other offices that you'll be fielding candidates for.
That'd be great.
All right. Thank you. And we'll be back with the final moments of hour number two of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
I'm terrific. I'm the best. I stand out from all the rest. And next to you, I'm even better.
News, weather, and traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
For me to go out and ride that new mountain bike I bought yesterday, what do you think?
I saw you post that on Facebook. Where'd you get that from?
I'm not going to say where I bought it.
Okay, so.
But let's just say I walked into the store to buy one thing, and I came out with that one thing plus this bike and a helmet.
That's usually the best shopping experiences I've learned.
I got a good deal on it, too.
Okay, there you go.
So I think I'm going to get after work today. I think I'm going to go out and go for a ride.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day to do that.
And then I'm going to call a taxi to take me home. All right, that does it for hour number two of today's feedback show. We'll be back with the third and final hour, but right now we're going to break for news with Radio PA and ABC, and our own Bob McCool will have a check on sports for you. It's all here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. And thank you for making us part of your day today.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, The Voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off the third and final hour of feedback. You're on air, Town Square, here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with...
Sean Pansky. I wasn't sure you were queuing me up there.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I want to keep you on your toes.
Hey, no, I appreciate it.
Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. Our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373, and our email address is feedback at 830weeu.com. Well, you heard Craig Snyder, the political director of Pennsylvania's Forward Party, talk about the efforts that third party is undertaking. On Friday, my guest will be Dr. Timothy Blessing, history professor at Alvernia University. He'll be with me at 10 a.m. on Friday, and we're going to be talking about third-party candidates and how they can impact an election. Now, that's what we had planned for when he was going to be here last Friday. Now, given what has happened over the weekend with Iran attacking Israel, that might change, but right now the topic is third-party candidates and how they can impact an election. So that's Friday. Then next Tuesday, which is Election Day, by the way, primary Election Day, the 23rd of April, during the 10 o'clock hour, Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. will be here. We'll be talking with him about some things, so stick around for that. I got that confirmed last night. And next Wednesday, April 24th at 11 a.m., we'll have some folks from Safe Berks with us to talk about how they help victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And then looking ahead to a week from Friday, which is the 26th of April at 10 a.m., Berks County Commissioner Chairman Christian Leinbach will be my guest. So that gives you some ideas to what's coming up on future feedback shows here on The Voice. You've heard President Biden say that Donald Trump is going to... he's going to do things to impact Medicare and Social Security. I'm paraphrasing there. Those weren't his exact words. But what you may not have heard is what Mr. Biden himself is doing to Medicare, and it's not good. This is from the Wall Street Journal. In fact, it is an op-ed piece written by the editorial board of the paper. The headline reads, "Biden Shrinks Medicare Advantage." If you haven't heard about this and you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, listen up. Let me read to you this op-ed piece. President Biden keeps accusing Republicans of trying to gut Medicare. No doubt he hopes seniors don't notice that his administration recently cut payments to Medicare Advantage plans, which will lead to higher patient costs and reduced benefits. Have you heard anything from the mainstream media about this? Probably not. back to this piece from the Wall Street Journal editorial board. About half of seniors are enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans, which are administered by private insurers with government funding. These plans have been increasing in popularity, especially among lower-income Americans, because they offer additional benefits such as dental and vision care. Out-of-pocket costs tend to be lower than in traditional fee-for-service Medicare. Critics of Medicare Advantage say insurers sometimes put up bureaucratic hurdles to covering needed treatments and procedures, which is true, reports the Wall Street Journal editorial board. But they also prevent unnecessary care, which is rife with traditional Medicare. Insurers also do a better job of coordinating care and keeping patients out of the hospital. If seniors disliked the program, it wouldn't be growing. Enter the Biden administration, which is trying to limit the program's growth by squeezing insurers. Progressives oppose Medicare Advantage because they dislike private market competition and want the government to control all of health care. The administration last year restricted plan marketing and cut payments to insurers on average by 1.1%. Again, I ask you, did you hear about this from the mainstream media? Probably not. Now the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services is clipping insurer-based payments by another 0.16%, which will take effect next year. The cut comes as insurers report increasing utilization among seniors owing to delayed pandemic care. Providers are also seeking higher reimbursements from insurers to offset rising overhead and labor costs. Berkeley Research Group projects Medicare Advantage medical costs will climb by 4 to 6% next year. In response to last year's payment cut, many plans increased patient copays and premiums, reduced benefits like vision and dental care, and tightened provider networks. More will have to do so next year. Shares of insurers tumbled after CMS's announcement, especially those with large Medicare businesses such as Humana, UnitedHealthcare, and CVS Health. Investors also fear the cuts will reduce enrollment. This may be why Cigna, back in January, sold its Medicare business to Healthcare Service Corporation. Medicare Advantage plans send notices of annual plan changes in the autumn, a few weeks before the November election. Seniors may be in for a rude cost and benefit shock when they try to renew. If seniors like their doctor, they might not be able to keep her. Perhaps election considerations explain why a bipartisan group of 61 senators, including my favorite guy, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, urged CMS in a January letter to ensure payment and policy stability for the Medicare Advantage program, adding that seniors must have stable access to the extra benefits and out-of-pocket protections only available in Medicare Advantage. Well, the Wall Street Journal editorial board asks, will Mr. Schumer now protest the administration's cut to drive more seniors out of private plans? By the way, CMS is also cutting physician payments in traditional Medicare to control its ballooning costs. The predictable result will be more provider consolidation, less healthcare competition, and a shift in cost to privately insured Americans. If only Republicans had nominated a presidential standard bearer who could explain all this to Americans. The Wall Street Journal editorial board. Check it out. It's in their paper today. In the op-ed section, headline reads, Biden shrinks Medicare Advantage. All right, with that said, let's go to the phones right now. Glenn in Reamstown is on the line with us. Glenn, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. I want to share about the EMS. I didn't get the chance to call in yesterday. I ran out and... But the EMS situation and why I'm missing, Burrow is going to start paying for the EMS calls. I'd like more information on that because I belong to a volunteer fire company in Lancaster County there. And most ambulances are, it's like a bleeding pig situation. We just upped our rate, what we charge per patient when their services are needed. We just went up to $650. And where the problem comes is that the legislature has limited the insurance or whatever Medicare and Medicaid can pay, so we have to accept that. So in other words, we're charging $650 per patient. That's if it's a basic life support customer, or then we have to only take $300, which is the max that they just upped it to this year from Medicaid or Medicare. So we're losing $300 what it costs us to operate right off the get-go. So most ambulances are running behind because they're not getting paid what it's costing them to run their operation. So now we upped our game a little bit, and further training and what have you with the medical technicians on board. So now we have an intermediate unit that would be like a step up from basic life care, so we can administer IVs and like a heart monitor, put your heart monitor on so you can monitor what their heart's doing while you're going to the hospital. As long as most times there will be a medic on board as well, which that's another cost on top of the basic medical ambulance service. So if what I'm missing, Burr is going to start paying for each call, that's going to increase the call volume for the ambulances. Will that sustain them? I don't know. But that's a basic fundamental how things work in the EMS side there.
So you're not allowed to pass on a copay to Medicare recipients, are you? You've got to swallow that difference.
Correct. We have to swallow that difference. Like I say, from our standpoint, that's $300 right there that we're losing on each patient that's a Medicare patient.
And Glenn,
go ahead.
And Glenn, do you work for a volunteer fire company, or is it?
We do. It's a volunteer fire company, and most ambulances have separated from the fire company because it is such a bleeding pig. Our operating budget. Now we do pay to have service, paid service, Monday through Friday, from 8 o'clock till 6 o'clock p.m. So that is a paid service. So that just by that alone, our budget for that is almost $40,000 a month.
Wow.
Just to pay for two people to be on the ambulance during the daytime when we have lack of volunteers.
And as a volunteer fire company, you folks rely on donations. Is that correct?
Correct. But under the law, we are allowed to charge, like I say, when an ambulance is in service, we are allowed to charge a fee for that service.
Now, how about somebody who is in a company health plan, let's say, or some other private health plan and not Medicare? You're able to recoup the entire cost to you, right?
That depends on the insurance company. Some insurance companies will pay the full amount, and some will not. And that's also a loophole in the law that what we can charge and what we got to accept.
But again, if it's not Medicare, Are you then able to pass on a copay to the patient or no?
Sometimes they can, but like I say, the most times it's not. You cannot double bill for an incident. So once you bill it to the insurance, you cannot bill it again because of being it's not. You can't. It's almost like having two insurances. Then you can't do that.
Now, of course, what Glenn is referring to here was a story, an issue that we talked about on yesterday's show, where I happened to see a post on Facebook that appeared on the Wyomissing Borough Police Department's Facebook page that said that the borough council there in Wyomissing had agreed that going forward, they're going to pick up the cost of EMS services for all residents within the borough, even if it's an EMS service that they need that's not in the borough. They'll pick up that cost. And Glenn, if I'm hearing you right, you don't think that this would be good from the standpoint that it would add more volume, add more work.
It would add the volume. I know for our volume, every year it's been increasing for the last 5 to 6 years. It's been increasing. Just from last year alone, we went from just a little bit over 1,000 calls for the year. We were up to almost 1,300, almost into the 1,400 range of calls.
And how many EMS people do you have there at the firehouse?
We currently have 14, I believe, that's on our roster.
And are they able to handle the volume that you just mentioned to us, or no?
Most of them can, but like I say, we do have two paid people that are we use through the hospital that supply paid EMS personnel during the daytime.
Glenn, thank you for calling.
But we're paying the hospital to do that as well. So like I say, our budget for that is like almost $40,000 a month.
Gotcha. Glenn, thank you for calling in today and sharing your expertise on this. I'm glad that you did. That filled in some gaps of information that we weren't able to get a hold of yesterday. So I appreciated the call today.
Yep. Appreciate it. You bet.
All right. Take care now.
Yep. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 610-374-8800. Toll free. 888-401-0459. We're going to take a break. But we'll be back with more of this Tuesday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square, right after these words. Stay with us.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. Again, our number is 610-374-8800. Toll free, 888-401-0459. If you'd like to call in your opinion, if you want to text in your opinion, that number is 484-650-3373. And, of course, you can also email us like you have been from the very beginning. That address is feedback at 830weeu.com. And if you do email us or text us, please include your first name and the town you live in. Would appreciate that so that we can identify you and know that we have your permission to read it on the air. Well, here's an interesting case that's coming before the Supreme Court. It's another example where the Supreme Court just can't stay out of politics no matter how hard it tries. But this I got from the Wall Street Journal. After attending the Stop the Steal rally near the White House on January 6th of 2021, small-town police officer Joseph Fisher and a friend began driving home to central Pennsylvania. They turned around and went back to Washington after learning their fellow supporters of then-President Donald Trump were occupying the Capitol. Joining the chaos, Fisher ultimately spent about 4 minutes inside the building and netted himself seven criminal charges, including a felony count of obstructing an official proceeding. Fisher has pleaded not guilty and is awaiting trial. But first, he has a date with the Supreme Court, which today, if they haven't already, will consider his claim that the obstruction of Congress charge is illegitimate. If the court agrees, it could upend hundreds of January 6th prosecutions, including Donald Trump's. At issue is whether prosecutors are allowed to charge January 6th rioters with violating an obstruction statute passed as part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, the corporate governance law that was enacted back in 2002 after the Enron financial scandal. Remember that? The law imposes up to 20 years in prison for anyone who alters, destroys, or hides a record, document, or other object so that it can't be used in an official proceeding like a court case or congressional investigation. The law also applies to anyone who otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding. Well, the Justice Department has used the statute against more than 300 people, it says, engaged in violent conduct during the January 6th riot. Two of the four charges Special Counsel Jack Smith brought against Trump for election interference rely on portions of the same statute. Smith alleges Trump individually violated the obstruction statute by pressing lawmakers to reject Electoral College votes and conspired with others to obstruct Congress's work. Trump is separately challenging all of Smith's charges, arguing he enjoys immunity because he was president at the time. The Supreme Court will take up that blockbuster case on April 25th. So it'll be very interesting to see what the outcome is in the case that comes before them today, and how many cases could be overturned if they rule in favor of this police officer from Pennsylvania. Oh, you know, we'll stay on top of that one for you. Speaking of Donald Trump and his hush money case that is underway now with the jury selection, which is going to take a little while for them to find a jury that can be non-biased in this case. Good luck up there in New York trying to find an unbiased jury. Anyway, this I got from The Hill. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office yesterday sought to fine former President Donald Trump over his inflammatory social media posts and remarks about his criminal hush money case. Assistant District Attorney Chris Conroy said the former president in three recent Truth Social posts violated a gag order imposed by Judge Juan Mershon, barring him from attacking witnesses, prosecutors, court staff, and the judge's family. Conroy asked that Trump be fined $1,000 for each post and be reminded he can be jailed if he continues violating the gag order. The judge did not immediately rule on the request following a court break in proceedings. He opted instead to set an April 23rd hearing date where he'll hear arguments on the prosecution's ask. The defendant is aware of the April 1st order. We know that from various posts he had made, Conroy said. Trump's attorney, Todd Blanche, insisted the posts in question do not violate the gag order, however. Blanche said the following: he is responding to salacious, repeated, vehement attacks by these witnesses. Monday's development, which came on the first day of Trump's hush money trial, followed a series of Truth Social posts Trump made about potential witnesses in recent days. Prosecutors pointed to an April 10th post where Trump thanked Michael Avenatti, the ex-lawyer to porn actress Stormy Daniels, for revealing the truth about two sleazebags who have, with their lies and misrepresentations, cost our country dearly. The sleazebags referenced by Avenatti were Daniels and Trump's ex-fixer, Michael Cohen. Another Trump post in question, also shared April 10th, showed an official statement by Daniels where she denied having an affair with Trump, a core allegation in the case. Daniels later recanted the statement, which was not noted in Trump's post. And lastly, in an April 13th post, Trump described Cohen as a disgraced attorney and felon, prosecuted for lying, and suggested Mark Pomerantz, an ex-Manhattan prosecutor who once oversaw the investigation into the former president, should be prosecuted for his terrible acts in and out of the DA's office. Prosecutors suggested a post Trump issued Monday morning as he arrived at the courthouse may also violate the gag order. The motion was written beforehand and doesn't reference it, however. If only Donald Trump would stop talking. But that's a huge hurdle that I don't think will ever be overcome. All right, let's go to the phones right now. We've got Richard in Wyomissing who wants to weigh in on J.D. Vance's, J.D. Vance's Ukrainian comments. Good morning, Richard. How are you today?
Oh, good morning. Yeah, I was working yesterday, and I couldn't respond when I know you played that thing by J.D. Vance over saying that he thinks with the mathematics and the priorities, we should spend more on aid to Israel and not so much with Ukraine. And I just wanted to read one sentence that was in the New York Times yesterday and one that was in USA Today. The one from the New York Times is just a sentence from a letter to the editor. It says, if Winston Churchill in 1940 had analyzed Britain's odds against Germany the way Senator Vance is viewing Ukraine's odds today, we'd all be living in a different world. But Churchill had those essential qualities that Mr. Vance and many Republicans lack: vision, courage, and a strong moral compass to see beyond mere economics to human dignity and simple right and wrong. The second sentence is from USA Today, another letter to the editor. It says, one only need look at the American Revolutionary War and the Vietnam War to punch holes in J.D. Vance's mathematical calculations. In each war, the superior combatant was ingloriously defeated by the will of the people and the aid of outsiders. So I just wanted to read those because I know when you played that thing from J.D. Vance, I couldn't get to a phone because I was working and so on. But, I appreciate it. And if we had more time, I'd mention how I disagreed with the gentleman today from the party that thinks that, they can have alternatives because the Democrats and Republicans are, too far apart. And I would agree Mastriano and the Republicans generally have gone way to the right. I don't think the Democrats have certainly gone that far to the left. And the Democratic opponent of Mastriano certainly is not talking about defunding the police. But that's my take this morning.
Well, Richard, thank you. I appreciated you calling in. And again, just to let everybody know who might not know who J.D. Vance is, he's the Republican U.S. Senator from Ohio. Richard, thank you. I appreciate you weighing in.
Thank you.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye.
610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back with more of this Tuesday edition of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on Air Town Square here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Our phone numbers again are 610-374-8800, toll-free 888-401-0459, and our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. Well, during the commercial break, this story from the Associated Press came across, and I thought I would share it with you. A federal appeals court has overturned a West Virginia transgender sports ban, finding that the law violates Title IX, the federal civil rights law that prohibits sex-based discrimination in schools. The ruling today from the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals blocks a West Virginia law banning transgender girls from playing on girls' sports teams. The court said the law cannot lawfully be applied to a 13-year-old girl who's been taking puberty-blocking medication and publicly identified as a girl since she was in the third grade. Sports participation is one of the main fronts in legislative and legal battles in recent years over the role of transgender people in U.S. public life. Most Republican-controlled states have passed restrictions on participation, as well as bans on gender-affirming health care for minors. Several have also restricted which bathrooms and locker rooms transgender people can use, particularly in schools. Now, this raises the question to me, what about the Title IX rights of biological girls in sports? Are you not violating those rights by forcing them to share a locker room with somebody who has male genitalia? I have to ask that. I'm in firm agreement transgender athletes have every right to participate in sports, but I don't think that the answer is to allow them to participate in sports that involve biological females, especially when it includes a locker room. I don't mean to sound prudish, but I think there's got to be another answer here. I've had people call into this show who have said that maybe the answer is to have separate sports teams just for transgenders. Of course, then you've got the problem there of how many transgenders are there in a particular school that would be able to make up a team, say it be basketball or what have you. But this whole idea of having a transgender share a bathroom with a biological female, I'm sorry, that's out of the question for me. If I was a father, I'd be fuming over that. But this really gets to me, that this federal appeals court says that we're violating the Title IX rights of the transgenders. Well, what about the Title IX rights of the biological females? We've got a few minutes left. If you want to weigh in on that, give us a call here and let us know what you think. Speaking of transgenders and court opinions, the U.S. Supreme Court has cleared the way for now for Idaho to ban transgender treatment for minors. I got this from the New York Times. Here's what the Times is reporting. The Supreme Court has temporarily allowed Idaho to enforce a ban on gender-affirming treatment for minors. This ruling came down yesterday, effectively suggesting that some justices appear comfortable with wading into another front in the culture wars. In siding with state officials who had asked the court to lift a block on the law as an appeal moves forward, the justices were sharply split, with a majority of the conservatives voting to allow the ban to take effect over the objections of the three liberals on the court. The court said the ban would apply to everyone except for the plaintiffs who brought the challenge. Notably, the opinions focused not on transgender care, a hot-button political issue that has prompted several Republican-led legislators to approve bills to restrict puberty-blocking drugs and hormone treatments, but on a broader legal question, universal injunctions. Now, universal injunctions are when a single judge issues a sweeping decision that applies beyond those directly involved in the dispute. Some justices have signaled an interest in looking at the tactic. Although orders in response to emergency applications often include no reasoning, the justices in this case divided into several factions. The decision included concurrences by Justice Neil Gorsuch, who is joined by Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas, and Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who is joined by Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Chief Justice John Roberts decided not to note a position in this case. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson dissented, and she was joined by Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Justice Elena Kagan noted a dissent. The Idaho law, passed by the state's Republican-controlled legislature, makes it a felony for doctors to provide transgender medical care for minors, including hormone treatment. States around the country have pushed to curtail transgender rights. At least 20 Republican-led states, including Idaho, have enacted legislation that limits access for gender transition care for minors. Now, there's a lot more to this New York Times article. I don't have time to get into it. But we will stay on top of this and keep you up to date on where that stands. In the meantime, let's go to Shillington and talk with Keith this morning. Keith, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Good. So my thought on the sports aspect is whatever your biological sex is at birth is the team that you need to play on, regardless of how you choose to identify. That way it still gives them the access to the teams. It doesn't unduly affect women's sports because obviously we know male structure and female structure is completely different. They're a lot stronger, they're a lot more powerful, et cetera, and therefore they're going to dominate those sports, but they're not females. So I think the best way to do it is even if they're trying to identify as a female is give them the aspect that they could still play, but they have to go with whatever their biology says, not what their mind is telling them.
Well, and I can see your point there, Keith, but what about the psychological impact that might have on the transgender female who identifies as a female and may feel uncomfortable in a men's locker room?
Well, you don't have to play sports, but you shouldn't have the right to subject the majority of the people to what the minority wants. And that's really what it is. I mean, you have very few that are in this position, not enough to even field their own teams. So if they want to play in a team, it should be by biological sex, not what their mind tells them. And let's face it, they provide therapy for everything else, so why not that?
What about this appeals court ruling that says that by banning transgenders from participating in sports, you're violating their Title IX rights? What are your thoughts on that ruling?
Okay, so if you're banning them from sports altogether, saying they can't, I don't think you should be able to do that, but I do believe that it should be by biology, which also clears up the issue of what bathroom should I use. The bottom line is if you have the male genitalia, you go to the male one. You have the female, you go to the female one. And that's, you know, you play on those teams. I mean, you can still play sports. You can still identify however you want.
Keith, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate you taking the time to call.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye-bye now. And we've got just a few minutes left of today's show. Let's see here. Let me play this to you. Marco Rubio has weighed in on the president's call to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel. Let me play this up here for you for just a minute here before I play the soundbite. Marco Rubio is a Republican senator from Florida. And he's accused President Biden of sharing the details of his private phone call with Benjamin Netanyahu with the press in order to appease anti-Israel pro-terrorist activists within the Democratic Party. Rubio made that claim while on CNN, and here's a clip from the senator's interview with CNN's Jake Tapper.
Israel is not asking us to launch attacks on Iran. I am not, have ever heard the Israelis come to us and say, will you help us or will you attack Iran or go in after Iran? They're not asking for that. They're not asking for it. But I think we go from that to the other extreme, which is Joe Biden telling Netanyahu, take the win, don't do anything. And then his people leaking it to the media, leaking it to the press. And what it sets up is they know that Israel's going to respond. They know this for a fact. So why would the White House leak it? There's only one reason they leaked that. And that is that so when Israel does respond, the White House can say, we told them not to do it, and at least somehow, in some way, appease these so-called peace activists, by the way, these ceasefire now people who were out yesterday cheering the launch of hundreds of rockets and drones and missiles against Israel. People that are out there cheering military attacks of this scale and scope are not peace activists.
That's Marco Rubio, senator from Ohio. He also said the call would embolden Israel's enemies in the Middle East. He added, and I quote, it is the continuing part of this public game that they're playing, which frankly encourages Iran and Hezbollah, which we haven't even talked about, and the Houthis and all these other elements that are targeting Israel. Self-described anti-war activists in Chicago cheered after learning that Iran had launched hundreds of drones and missiles at Israel this past Saturday. Earlier in the day at that same event, before the Iran attacks, one agitator led chants in Farsi, translating to death to America and death to Israel, according to a Free Press reporter there. So it's now expanding. That chant was first heard in Michigan, and we talked about that the other day here on the show, and we still haven't gotten any response from Rashida Tlaib, who refuses to make any comment about that rally that took place in her district with that very chant said. And now the chant occurs in Chicago. I'm sorry, but these protesters, I believe, are on the wrong side of history when they are supporting a group that supports terrorism. I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. Israel is our ally here. And yes, there are some innocent Palestinians, but let's keep in mind the Palestinians voted Hamas into office. They voted them in as their leader. They allowed them to build tunnels under their homes. They allowed them to put military equipment, military weapons in their homes, hidden under their beds. I'm sorry, but a lot of these Palestinians are not innocents by any stretch. But I won't say any more because we're out of time. We'll be back with the final moments of feedback in just. I'm definitely going to get on that mountain bike today for sure that I bought yesterday. I'm going to take advantage of this beautiful weather.
Yeah, no, it's a great day. I'm definitely going to play some basketball.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you, buddy. Appreciate what you bring to the table here on feedback.
No problem, Bill.
We'll do it again tomorrow, okay? And I want to thank everybody who called in and shared their opinions or wrote in and shared their opinions with us. You folks are the stars of this show. We'll do it again tomorrow for sure. And until tomorrow, by the way, I want to remind you, we do have Bob Casey Jr., Senator Bob Casey Jr., coming on the show next Tuesday during the 10 o'clock hour. We're working on trying to get Republican Senate candidate Dave McCormick on with us as well. That way we can give some equal opportunities to both candidates there. All right, until tomorrow, make it a great rest of your day today. Okay? Okay. That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.